Good evening, insiders. Welcome back to another rendition of the Quiet Speculation Insider Cast. It is Monday, October 21st, and it has been an absolute whirlwind in the Magic community. I am joined today by Crowberry and Sam. They're jumping back on. Thank you guys both for hopping on with me to dissect what is a brand new, brand new in the sense that it is Frontier, but that we were familiar with. But it is...
You cut out there, Chris.
I just got dropped. Yeah,
sorry
about that. Discord just reset me there. No, we've got Pioneer, and so let's go ahead and jump in. I appreciate you guys both joining to dissect all the craziness that was from today.
Yeah, absolutely insane today. This is probably. I guess there is a precedent because of the announcement of Modern is kind of the last thing that was like this, but this is a pretty fast moving hype train.
Yeah, I was barely inundated into the Magic competitive scene when Modern was announced, and now this is definitely the biggest announcement to happen since the inception of Modern, so it's a big deal.
Yeah, from a secondary market standpoint, we were talking about this before cast. This is the biggest day for sure in terms of trying to keep up and just sift through cards moving and information. Probably since Modern Horizons was spoiled, it's probably going to go down as one of the largest, maybe the largest sales day of the year. I feel like everybody's been moving cards left and right cards that hadn't been heard from in a while. So. Why don't we talk first? We've got a whole list of things to cover here tonight, and it's going to be pretty jam-packed. We'll do our best to keep it to an hour, but we're prepared to go just a tad over if we have to. Why don't we start by talking, just unraveling a little bit about the actionables, what's already moved, what is kind of still been moving throughout the day, and then, you know, what if there's anything specific. I had one or two cards that in mind that we were kind of talking about at the beginning, or you know, before we got on here, that I wanted to just touch on once more. I'll go ahead and start that. I wanted to recap the conversation.
Rest in peace, Chris.
Oh, man.
Discord's killing me here.
It's all right. Oh,
well,
lost Chris for real. Oh, he's back. Bear with us, folks. We're having some internet issues.
Yeah, no, this is actually Discord itself. It's not the internet. Brutal. Sorry, everybody. So why don't we go ahead and get started? We're going to chat about, we'll unravel the actionables from the day. So General Finance, just to give it perspective, I logged on at about 11:30-ish, checking in right before I went out to grab a bite to eat. There were about 700 unread messages at that point. And I came in having no clue that this announcement, I didn't know what happened, but I obviously knew something happened. I thought there was something crazy with the ban announcement. Started looking through the messages. By that point, Phil and team in here, really just a shout out to the whole insider community. You guys rocked it as always. Started reading back through some of the messages, and it looks like just an unbelievable contribution from everybody. There was a list of roughly 20 or so cards put into actionable purchasing, which have basically, if you were looking at those before today versus today at this time, figure 9 o'clock Eastern, pretty much every one of these cards has moved in some capacity. And I can't wait to see what MTG Stocks interest is going to look like tomorrow. I'm wondering if they like are going to run out of room on their page. I wanted to give one shout out specifically to GTutor from the community, George. He's on our moderation team. George put together an excellent kind of extended deep dive list by set, actually, of basically every card that's ever been really, you know, price had really strong price memory in its standard and really even kind of currently with its modern playability. So if you are interested in that list, George has it. I'm sure, you know, George, I don't want to speak for you, but I wouldn't be surprised if you'd be comfortable sharing that to folks. It was a great list and certainly very helpful. So, Crowberry or Sam, I'll turn it to you guys if you want to talk just a little bit about the movement here. Any cards particularly? There's been so much movement. Obviously, some of the staple stuff that people jumped on, Saheeli and Jace Friend's Prodigy, those things have I've been seeing in the sale reporting, they've been jumping tremendously. But you guys want to offer your thoughts on just some of that movement and how you guys did today, you know, whether it was speculating or selling into it?
Yeah, Kirby, start us off.
Yeah, sure. Basically, what I've been looking at today is just a sort of a feeding frenzy, and it's frankly been hard to keep everything straight. There's a ton of cards moving, as we all know. Interest that I've been following today, Thoughtseize in particular, I think that's going to be like one of these format-defining cards. Not necessarily ban-worthy, but definitely good. That's going to be my big one. And then I'm looking more towards kind of the staple cards too, sort of like our shock lands, our check lands, and then also the Kaladesh fast lands. Most of those are going to be the things that we want to early get in on. Most of us are selling into the hype, and a lot of us are going to be wanting to play with these cards too. So I think those are the main targets for me right now, and maybe for a lot of you too.
Yeah, personally, I bought a very large stack of playable Magic cards today. I mostly bought like the stuff that is big and splashy and was guaranteed to spike, like Aetherworks Marvel and Saheeli Rise, Jace Prince Prodigy, that kind of stuff. But those are not necessarily the long-term picks. Those are just kind of short terms that I'm going to flip the second I get like confirmations of shipment. The really good buys right now are the ones that are guaranteed to not be banned, because keep in mind that only the five fetches are banned so far, and that's not going to last. We're going to have a bit of a ban list here. It's going to be determined over the next couple of weeks while Magic Online is getting played. So we won't dive too much into what we think is going to get banned and what's going to stick around, but just as like a general general thing to keep in mind is that the lands are not going to get banned. None of the lands are broken. Fetch lands are where they drew the line. So Blooming Marsh, Spirebluff Canal, like all of those, the fast lands are the best ones. But all the lands in general are extremely safe to go ahead and pick up now. Whereas even Thoughtseize is something that they might wind up possibly taking out of the format. We don't know until Thursday when they tell us more about their ban philosophy and what they want the format to look like. Because like Thoughtseize, for example, is going to be everywhere. But also it's the only thing in the format that's keeping all the combo at bay. So do they want to try and prevent this format from being full of combo, or do they want to try and keep this format as diverse as possible? That's going to inform our decisions moving forward. So just the cards that I bought, you know, as I said, it was like Aetherworks Marvel, Saheeli Rise, Jace Prince Prodigy, the Scarab God. I bought like two Emrakul the Promised End because I'm worried about that card getting banned, but I figured it would probably go up anyway. And oh, Torrential Gearhulk. But that card hasn't gone up much yet. Torrential Gearhulk is not really spiked. It's only up a little bit, but that is an excellent buy.
Sam, you mentioned Saheeli Ray and or Saheeli Rai, sorry, and Aetherworks Marvel. I think both of those are certainly candidates for bans as well. Just given what they can do, or copycat, I guess. Either way, you know, those are ones we talked about. As we obviously kind of are just baselessly speculating on that now, but those are cards that have historically been pretty broken. So.
Yeah, I think that from the looks of the Jeskai and the four color Saheeli lists, even the preliminary lists with no results here, I still think Saheeli Rai is probably too powerful for this format. So I will be selling mine as soon as I possibly can. Aetherworks Marvel, I actually think has a good shot of not getting banned, because three mana Teferi looks excellent in a format with Dig Through Time as, you know, a big staple. What was the other one I was talking about buying before? Torrential Gearhulk. Teferi 3 mana is great against Torrential Gearhulk. So Teferi 3 maybe even, you know, could maybe get banned in this format, but if it looks like he's not going to get banned, he could really hold back those degenerate combos. So Aetherworks Marvel, I think, probably not bannable in a format where Teferi is just invalidating it.
Gotcha.
Oh, and yeah, we have 15 Needle and Thoughtseize to fight it too. We have so many more tools than that standard format had.
Yeah. So to recap that, though, I think your point was excellent. To, you know, what you were really getting at there, ban list aside, and kind of, you know, speculating on what that looks like ultimately. Your point of let's see how the format shakes out, how they want the format to shake out, and they being WotC, obviously, and then the land base itself, right? Lands lands in general are very hard to ban unless they do something oppressive. And I think we're very clearly indicating things like fast lands, which really honestly haven't moved a ton. You know, I've been watching them. I think Botanical Sanctum, is it? I think that one's seen a little bit of movement, but in general, those cards haven't really moved a ton, and they have some upside. I think those are going to be some staple cards in this format, along with cards like Mana Confluence and you know, certainly some of the other, like obviously Shocklands are going to be in there. But without Fetchlands, Mana Base is going to be a lot more interesting. We're going to have to keep an eye on how those shake out as well.
Yeah, I think the fast lands, especially the like Blooming Marsh and Spirebluff Canal, have significant potential in this format, and definitely are still excellent buys at their current price point.
Agreed. Yep. Yeah. So those were actually cards I wanted to mention. You know, and I mentioned Mana Confluence, and I think there was mixed opinions on that one, but the fast lands as a whole, and you just mentioned two of them specifically, I think we all feel pretty strongly about those as not really having caught on as the other stuff did, and worth a look at picking those up if you need them.
I also think Mana Confluence is a really good potential card. I'm a firm believer in the card. I think a format with a mana base, like once people start to realize just how bad the mana is in this format, Mana Confluence is going to really start seeing some gains.
The counterpoint, which was well made, in General Finance earlier today, I was kind of mentioning Mana Confluence. That was actually the card that immediately jumped. It was the first card that came to my mind when I started dissecting the whole Pioneer information and announcement. And the counterpoint was the fact that pinging yourself for a damage for that mana fixing could be really hard to offset with things like aggro and specifically burn, kind of being set up pretty well in this new format. You know, cards like I always have a hard time pronouncing this one too. of the Great Rebel, though, you know which card I'm talking about. Cards like that and the new giant. Thank you. I just kind of skipped over the first part of that. But those cards are going to make it very difficult for Mana Confluence. The point was that Mana Confluence, those pings are going to hurt a lot. I felt mixed on that because I feel like, first of all, Oko is going to be is poised to do well in this format if it's already doing well in Modern, Legacy, Vintage. And the food tokens that Oko produces alone could help offset that in the Mana Confluence in Oko decks. But I'm wondering if that overall it may not see as much play. So, you know, it's something, I guess, to keep in mind. That's why we were a little more cautious on that card. And that all being said, Mana Confluence has been moving a little bit. I've been tracking that one. I actually picked up a couple of copies of it for myself. You know, that was actually the only card I bought out of all this news. And so I've been watching it just to see if that ended up moving at all. And it sold a little bit. It hasn't moved a whole lot, maybe about 10 or 15% total. But it is definitely selling a little bit. So, we wanted to, that's a little bit of a recap there on the actionables. We talked a little bit about what definitely covered, you know, what's already spiked. There's going to be so many tomorrow showing up on interest. Mentioned a few cards, Thoughtseize, some of those lands, Mana Confluence and the fast lands. I wanted to talk a little bit about a few, I guess, like some fallout, right? Like a little bit about the fallout about this change and what we can expect for, you know, just in general moving forward, potential impacts to like format staples and I'm talking about cross format staples. I also want to talk a little bit about the bailout that this kind of does, right? Like there's a lot of boxes of shame, quote unquote, around the speculation and secondary market community. And so I think, you know, people have been kind of joking about this, calling it a bailout to the secondary market for bad specs. But what's interesting about that is you have to remember, if you're looking at a card that was in fact a failed spec years ago with like Battle for Zendikar, for example, and when the Expeditions kind of deflated prices across the board, those cards likely have a lot of hidden supply, and I'm putting that in quotes, cards that are not listed currently on whether it's TCG or elsewhere, that are going to start showing up. So stacks of those cards are going to be harder and harder to sell through. So I wanted to caution folks on that. And then the other point that I want to get to is,
just highlighting Quiet Spec and how important this community is. So we'll talk about that at the end. Let's go ahead and start with the impact to cross-format staples. So the point I really wanted to touch on here and get your guys' thoughts on is what this does to standard cards moving forward. So they've already got Modern, right? Modern's already a format that certainly has impact as cards are first printed. We've seen it with Oko. We saw it with Arclight Phoenix. There's a lot of cards, Teferi and Karn from War. These cards that come out and they make just huge format-defining impacts in formats outside of standard. Do you guys think that Pioneer, and I keep wanting to call it Frontier, but I know it's Pioneer. They couldn't have come up with a name that was more differentiating, I guess.
Yeah, of course not, right?
Right. Yeah, like it has the last anyway. Do you guys think that this format adds another layer to standard speculation? In other words, do standard cards have more likelihood to have a little more value attached to them because now they've got an extra format where they can be relevant?
Yeah, I'll start us off here. Absolutely. So firstly, the fact that Wizards of the Coast has already announced the GP schedule moving forward with the formats across those various Grand Prix, many of them are including Pioneer. In fact, so many of them that there are currently going to be more Grand Prix upcoming for Pioneer than there will be for Standard. There are just as many Pioneer GPs announced as there are Modern GPs. That is huge. Wizards is proving that they're willing to support this format. And so basically what that says to me is that this format has to be terrible to fail. If this format is like pretty medium, like Standard is, but you know, it's not that bad, people are going to play the crap out of it and it's going to really succeed and it's going to drive a lot of finance moving forward. Like you were saying with talking about standard cards outside of the context of just their standard playability. So definitely, I think it's going to be very impactful moving forward. And one other thing that is possibly impact standard finance moving forward is there a possibility that this is going to happen again? Because, I mean, this is the second time they've created the non-rotating format so that people can use their standard cards after they rotate. It's basically the same reason that they created Modern. So are they going to do this again in 10 years? I would say probably. I mean, obviously, it's too far out to guess in advance. But if we think that this is kind of the norm now, people are going to be a lot more hesitant to move away from their, you know, best card in standard mythic rare when it might be the all-star of a format that's coming out in 5 years or something, you know, a few years down the line. Especially since they've kind of set up that expectation that if the card pool gets too deep here, they might create a new format for it.
Yeah, that's an interesting take on that.
And yeah, and just to add to that, I think, you know, you make it sound like, oh, 10 years out. Yeah, it's, I guess in relative terms, it is a short amount of time. But for the length of our game, you know, it's still 10 years. It's an entire decade. And yeah, this is becoming a pattern too. Like we have Legacy into Modern, you know, and between that we had Extended at some point. Now we have this new thing going on. I think there are a lot of waves to ride here, and that's always been the case. I don't think the precedent that has been set by this announcement and then also by the previous formats is going to matter too much in terms of the long-term stuff. But I think we're going to have to see what this does to standard cards going forward to really know where we're going to be in a year or two. I think this year is going to be very important going forward to see things like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just saying, you know, I think it's also very possible that we might get a large swath of casual players who say things like, oh, I sold my Aetherworks marbles for 50 cents or a dollar after rotation, and now this new format got announced and they're $10. I'm never doing that again, right?
Exactly.
Casual players often feel, you know, really burned after their cards spike when they sell them. So small things like that can wind up influencing large aspects of the Magic market because, you know, casuals have so much influence over the price of certain cards. Although it's probably too early to say whether or not that's going to be a factor. It's just something to potentially keep an eye out for.
Yeah, Matt Cardbreaker just posted a really good thought here too. He said, it seems like this further erodes the opportunity to buy stuff after it rotates, since there'll be less cards without a format after they leave standard. I think that's a elevator pitch version of what we're saying here, and I think that's 100% right. I think the rotate, you know, I actually wrote articles about rotating specs for EDH purposes, and few of those cards are already kind of hitting in terms of, you know, if you didn't get in shortly after I wrote about them, they've actually in some cases doubled, tripled, and quadrupled in price already because they were in demand. The rotation kind of came and went, and there wasn't really any supply coming back online. Have a harder time getting, you know, restocked on those rotating cards if people are hanging on to them via buy list and so on and so forth. And so that'll cascade down to potentially making it more difficult. You know, we're going to have to keep a really close eye moving forward for those floors to hit if we want to keep the game inexpensive and, you know, buying those cards at their cheapest price points. No, so that's great. I appreciate you guys with the roundtable. There's actually a couple of questions that I've seen come through in chat that I think are really good, and they're kind of on this topic. One of them was very specifically the impact that Pioneer is going to have to Modern. And so I have some mixed thoughts on this. I'll go ahead and start with that. G2 asked that question, and he said, especially Modern Horizon. So I actually have some thoughts on this. Very obviously, Modern Horizons and all these other master sets over the last, you know, several years that would have timing-wise been involved were not included because they weren't, you know, they're Modern exclusive sets and Legacy or Vintage, I guess, for the Masters as well. But Modern Horizons specifically, I feel like, is a really important point to discuss because in here, in Quiet Speculation, we've talked about Modern Horizons a few different times now and, you know, reaching for the floors, waiting for the cards to hit their floors, knowing that there's a lot of unique cards in Modern Horizons. And so if you're speculating on those cards, the expectation was that once it goes out of print, those cards are going to, certainly they can and will be reprinted in time, but there's going to be probably an opportunity for some of those cards before a reprint hits and after they go out of print to see appreciation. I don't think this is going to detract. I don't think Frontier will, or gosh, I just did it again. Pioneer is going to detract from Modern Horizon, Modern. But I do think it's going to make the turnaround on Modern Horizons and really probably a lot of Modern specs a little bit harder to come by. Sam, you hit on the point that I wanted to touch on, and I'm just going to echo it. You mentioned Pioneer and Modern have the same amount of GPs dedicated to them next year, according to the schedule that was just released. And that alone, to me, says that while Modern isn't going anywhere in short order, theoretically, the attendance on those are going to be tracked very closely. And in a case where Modern starts to lose a player base because of Pioneer, I imagine that over time, over the next, you know, call it 12, 24, 36 months, 2 to 3 years out, Modern could go the way of Legacy, where the player base continues to kind of just naturally roll off and shrink a little bit, and players convert over to this Pioneer format. Now, that being said, Modern is in it's also not in its greatest state right now. It was very diverse in the most recent, you know, the most recent was a GP, I think, last weekend, not a day ago, but the weekend prior to that, where there was a very diverse output of decks. But that being said, it historically has kind of become a degenerate format where it's like turn two, turn three, turn four, and game's over. So if players are wanting something fresh and Pioneer isn't turn two, turn three, turn four, it turns into six or seven turns, and now you get a little bit more of a competitive game, that alone could differentiate and pull players away out of Modern into Pioneer. So
yeah, no, I definitely agree with what you're saying there. I think we're going to learn so much about the future of Modern and of Pioneer from the Thursday announcement where they talk about the philosophy of bannings for this format, because that informed so much of our decision-making in regards to Modern when they told us, hey, we want Modern to be a turn four format. We want everyone to be able to kill on turn four. Those decks that are, you know, can sometimes kill on turn three is fine, but decks that are often killing on turn two need to go. And that has informed so much of our decision-making across, you know, before ban and restricted announcements and speculating on cards post standard. So I think that may actually tell us a lot about the state of Modern moving forward from this weekend or from this Thursday, because is this possible, or is it possible that Modern may be where they decide the degenerate combos can just go to duke it out, right? Because that's kind of what Modern is right now at this moment. Like Amulet Titan, Storm, these are some of the best decks in Modern, the Urza decks, and these are all kind of very linear combo decks. Or if not combo, like lock pieces, just, you know, very linear, difficult to interact with, that require very specific sideboard cards to beat. But Front Pioneer is not really seeming like that. It's seeming like it's going to be a bit more about, a bit closer to standard, actually, where it's this numerous viable archetypes that, while some of them may be linear, they don't necessarily require extremely specific sideboard cards like Rest in Peace to beat. But, you know, maybe Wizards is going to keep the philosophy that they've had for Modern, you know, that they've always had, and continue to try and make it a healthy format where even mid-range or control variants can fight. Or maybe this is them kind of stepping back and saying, like, hey, Modern's kind of always found a way to be degenerate. We're just going to let it be degenerate and focus more on Pioneer. I mean, they wouldn't outright say that, but we can infer implication from that based on what they say on Thursday.
Yep, and just to jump on that too, I'm not totally convinced that Pioneer will be fair either. Bear with me on this one. The mess that Modern has become is really, it's just the result of too many cooks in the kitchen, too many cards, a lot of different design philosophies going on throughout the years. And they've mostly done an okay job of curbing that every time something arises that is completely broken, but we have to suffer through it for 3 months to a year. But the thing that I'm holding out for on Front, or you see, and now I'm doing it too. The thing I'm holding out for on Pioneer is whether or not they're going to curate this ban list properly to where we do have interactive games, things that aren't just decided by die rolls. And of course, we will have matchups that are like that. It's just the nature of Magic. But I'm waiting to see what happens with that, truthfully.
I've also heard, so there's so many different varying theories on this going around the Magic community right now. And I've heard a lot of really good ones. So that's why I'm pushing towards not really giving a strong answer on this question until I've heard more from Wizards of the Coast by Thursday. But I've heard that people are saying that this new format may take the place of Legacy, actually, and take a lot of the players away from that format, since there can only be so many formats, right? I mean, the players are all going to have to go somewhere, and the Legacy players are always going to play Legacy, but then there are some players who, if Pioneer is good enough, could be drifted away, and support for Legacy may dwindle, because again, you know, you can only have so many Grand Prix in a year. And how are you going to allocate those formats? If Modern is more popular than Legacy, is Legacy even going to get, you know, a couple GPs a year anymore? So while Wizards of the Coast in their announcement of Pioneers said that it is an additive format, I think it's correct for the community to be pretty skeptical of that, because a new format cannot be purely additive. So how additive it is kind of remains to be seen, whether or not it's going to eat up some of the Legacy player base, some of the Modern player base, or both. I think it remains to be seen.
Yeah, and just to wrap that piece up, I actually am not, I don't see Legacy going away, because I feel like Legacy is basically the equivalent of a casual player that likes to play competitively. Casual players and Legacy players have one thing in common, and they're very passionate about the game itself and their, I would call it their format, I'm putting that in quotes. I would be shocked if it takes away from Legacy. Now, that being said, your point about GP support is well made, Sam, because it could take away that GP support if Legacy players don't come out and force four of those couple of a year. Or more importantly, right, I think this is probably the better way to phrase it, and the more likely possibility is Pioneer gets so popular, and so Modern and Pioneer stay popular, and they have more expansive player bases showing up at these GPs, and therefore Legacy is less profitable for channel Fireball. That's the case, in my opinion, where Legacy goes away. It's not because the players don't want to play it anymore. It's just because there's not as many players playing Legacy. That's my take on that that opinion. But anyway.
Yeah, no, I wasn't trying to imply that Legacy players are going to stop playing Legacy, at large anyway. But when Modern came along, some Legacy players did start playing less Legacy and played more Modern.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's just because there's less events to play Legacy in. And if you think there's not a lot of events to play Legacy right now, zero is a lot less than some, right? if Legacy is gone from the Star City Games Open circuit, if they have no more Legacy Opens and no Team Constructed Opens with including Legacy, if the Team Constructed Open becomes Standard, Modern, and Pioneer, which seems extremely likely, and if we stop having Legacy Grand Prix, fewer people will play Legacy. Legacy is not going to die, but some people are going to play it or are not going to play it who used to play it.
Sure, that's
there are fair. People who would only play it to go to the Grand Prix, people who would only play it to go to these Opens and stuff. Those people do exist, and I don't necessarily think that they have a large control over the price of duels or anything, right? Like, it's not like there's going to be a big reserve list crash or anything like that. It's just that that might be where some of the player base goes, is to Pioneer from that, if support for Legacy begins to dwindle even more than it has.
Yeah. So to recap, I mentioned Modern, and we talked a lot about all these different formats. It all remains to be seen, I think, ultimately, you know, what we kind of have offered our opinions there. I think we'll your point is well made also, Sam, about Thursday. I think that's going to be an informative update about the ban list for Pioneer and what the expectations are. We'll keep an eye on that, and we'll keep a pulse of that. And maybe that's even a topic to revisit in a couple of weeks once we have a better idea of how things are shaking out. The other recap item I want to touch on was just specifically Modern Horizons. I feel that the runway on Modern Horizons is going to take a little bit longer now as a result of this. I think that the format, the Pioneer format, is going to kind of quiet the spotlight on Modern a little bit for the next few weeks, or possibly even the foreseeable future. And so Modern Horizons speculation is going to be more heavily dependent on EDH, which right now is not, Commander is not in focus. There's Command Fests, and, you know, so the Commander community is getting some support there. But in general, those Commander, Oathbreaker, Brawl speculations are going to kind of be slow, in my opinion. I think it's going to take until usually around the spring is when EDH Commander type specs really start picking up. And that's kind of when the lulls happen between Standard, Modern, and now Pioneer. And that actually may even not happen anymore with the Pioneer format being added in there. So long story short there, I'm not so sure Modern Horizons is going to be as quick as we had all kind of hoped. We've talked about it being something that might turn around, you know, in 6 months. It might now be 12 months, for example.
Yeah, no, I was saying that we were just around the corner from a Modern bull market very recently. That's something I've been talking about for like about a month or two. And I kind of have to retract that now. I think there's going to be a lot less rampant speculation in the Modern market, a lot less moving of staples from week to week. Where, like, if you'd asked me last week, I would have said that Amulet Titan staples are just all about to really burst in value because they've all been a lot lower recently. Like Azusa Lost But Seeking is like $20 right now. She was 40 just a few months ago, and she's seeing way more play than she's seen recently. But if the community eye is on Pioneer, which it very clearly is so far, the Modern bull market may be a little bit delayed, or even not happen. So I don't know.
Yeah, we'll have to see how that shakes out as well. Keep an eye on that.
It depends on community interest in the format moving forward. We'll see. We'll know as early as Wednesday is when the format comes to Magic Online. So we'll start seeing how well decks are performing. Hopefully by Thursday, I think we should have a lot of good information to start making more decisions about the format's long-term future.
Yeah. So to circle back on a question from chat, kind of along the line, we were talking about archetypes that we felt were well positioned. One of the questions was, I'm just coming back to that one before we jump into a new topic. One of the questions was, why did we think that burn/red cards would be well positioned? And if those are well positioned in our minds, what are some good specs? I stupidly called out Magic Fest Lightning Bolt with a question mark without really thinking about it. It's not actually legal in Pioneer, so go ahead and ignore that, everybody in chat who is going to read that. But there are some reasonable specs in that, in the kind of the prowess, aggro, red, burn, you know, I'm kind of mixing those together, that probably haven't been talked about a ton, but I know we covered in general finance. So just to answer the question, I put these in chat. But we've got Eidolon. Did I say it right that time? Hopefully.
You got it, dude.
Heck yeah. All right. Eidolon of the Great Revel, Monastery Swift Spear, and Bone Crusher Giant. Those were three that come to my mind immediately. They were ones that we talked about a little bit in general finance. Keep an eye on those. I'm not necessarily going out and like saying those are great must-have picks. Eidolon is probably my favorite of those because it does have a price memory, I think, as high as $15 at one point, maybe even $20 at one point when burn was really potent. It was probably about 3 years ago now, but I do like that one quite a bit in general. I think that would be well positioned, especially if my mana confluence ends up being an important fixer. It punishes decks pretty hard that are already getting pinged by shocks and mana confluence.
I agree with what you just said there. Eidolon of the Great Revel. As people called out Soulscar Mage in the Discord as well. I think that's another great one. Aside from that, it's probably just the lands. There's not really a lot of expensive cards in the red deck, it looks like, so far. Oh, maybe Hazoret the Fervent.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah. That's going to call out here.
Yeah, I would recommend staying away from Atarka's Command since we don't have the support for red-green in the format at this time.
The land base, right?
Right.
Yeah, a lot of the other disparate lands that we have from the sets that, you know, they're not shocks or checks, they're going to be really hard to support those colors, as we've said here. But I don't think they're worth ignoring, just to add to that. You want to keep an eye on them and start digging those things out because they're going to be at least tertiarily important to a lot of these deck lists that just need that extra little piece of land.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so jump into another topic that I wanted to cover. It's the idea of just Magic Finance. I want to touch on this really quickly. Magic Finance, MTG Finance, has always kind of gotten this bad rap because there are, you know, the what I call bad apples that end up trying to manipulate prices and things like that, and it gives that whole financial speculation type thing a bad name, in my opinion. And I wanted to touch on this because today, with these 900 plus messages, I mean, granted, it was a little overwhelming, but I got online and I got into general finance, and within probably not even 10 minutes between the actionable purchasing post by Phil, one of our admins in here, and that was actually a cultivated list from the community. But between that and just a quick perusing of some of those messages, even just more current ones, within 10 minutes, I had an almost complete picture, as complete as 10 minutes I could get, of what had happened in the day. And I wanted to just emphasize the importance of a community like this with Quiet Speculation, where we have all these brilliant minds that have a lot of experience in Magic, whether you're players, you're speculators, you're vendors, or all three in a lot of cases, or some combination of those. I just want to say thank you to everyone. I mean, you all did an awesome job today dissecting this information and taking what I think would take just an average individual person possibly days to dissect all of. It was dissected in, you know, like I said, a few hours, and really in the actionables, it was probably within about 20 or so minutes. So that's pretty impressive. And I just want to kind of give a shout out to everyone for that.
Yeah, it was awesome. An awesome way to spend my day, like this morning when I was just heading into work for the day. I just kind of peeped to the Discord here, and the discussion was really, really good. A lot of them key me into certain buys that I made that I have definitely already made money on. So that's pretty awesome. And then moving forward, some of them are going to be pretty good long terms as well. Like, I definitely wouldn't have even, like, Soulscar Mage I already said, but I would not have seen that card coming. And I don't think it's gone up just yet, but it's, like, very, very clearly an excellent buy.
Yeah, and there are a lot of cards like that too. Another one that I'm looking at here is Abbot of Carol. It's kind of a Premier 2 drop in that for a while here, but That'd be one I'm looking at. And I also want to say, don't forget the little guys in the boxes. You're going to be looking at Lightning Strikes, Stoke the Flames, cards like that. Teamer Battle Rage is one that comes to mind. Cards like that are going to be finding homes in these red decks, and players are going to want them. There is an abundance of these cards, but, you know, nickels and dimes.
Yeah, there's so many good cards. I mean, Stoke the Flames, I'm so happy you mentioned that, because that card has real price memory. Stoke the Flames was like a $5 card in Standard. There's just so many cards like that that have just become absolutely worthless. And it's like with Stoke the Flames as an example. Fatal Push is another good one. Monastery Swift Spear. But Stoke the Flames, using that as an example, is one where you think like, oh, supply's got to be huge on that. You know, it's an uncommon, but it was from a core set that wasn't really that widely opened. And even at the peak supply, you know, after the set had been drafted and opened so much, the card legitimately was $5 until it rotated. It was very expensive. I think it was, did it go up to 7 at some point? Like, I have to go look that up now.
Yeah, that sounds about right. I remember having to pay, what was it, $40 for a set at one point. It was absurd.
Yeah, no, it was $5 for most of its point in Standard. There's like a weird spike I'm looking at, which I can't tell if that's actually going up to $10. But yeah, I mean, the card and all sorts of cards like this have the ability to maintain these prices if the demand is there. It's just the question of you know, what's going to be playable or not. So there's so many opportunities now to buy cards like maybe Stoke the Flames is a 4 of in the best deck. And maybe it goes from 30 cents back up to $3 or $4. I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities like that, and we'll probably know more. I mean, obviously we've already seen a bunch of those today, but we'll learn more about those hopefully within this week, and we can, you know, talk about them in the Discord here so people can buy them before they spike and get to play with them.
Yeah, so let's shift gears a little bit. We've got about, I don't know, 10, maybe 15 minutes left here, about 15 minutes, give or take. Let's talk a little bit about what happened over the weekend with the Mythic Championship and then also today's ban list. It got completely swept under the rug by Pioneer, but there were some really important developments. Obviously, the ban list, we got exactly what we expected. Field of the Dead was banned. But interestingly enough, Javier Dominguez won yesterday. Quick shot. He's an incredible player, by the way, just unbelievable. But he ended up winning yesterday, and it was not the deck came down to a Gruul aggro deck, if I remember correctly, with Embercleave. So I want to just talk about kind of where we think the meta, the standard meta, is going to be shifting to. Now that the Golos deck is essentially nerfed, or, you know, possibly, I don't even know if it'll exist anymore after losing its core piece like that. What are your guys' thoughts on that, and what cards are well positioned? Embercleave has already jumped a ton, so obviously we're kind of a little late to the game on that in terms of the cast. I think it was talked about in here briefly, and so maybe some of the insiders actually got in on that, but. What other cards are you looking at, and really just maybe archetypes in general, are you thinking about moving forward with Field out?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if there was ever a great time to get into Embercleave, but I think it's pretty clear that you should just sell the card, because, I mean, sure, maybe it's good after Standard like shakes up a little bit more, but it's pretty safe. I think I saw them going for like 16s still today, so I think that's pretty safe to get rid of the card at that number, especially because some of the other Mythic Rares in this set are heinously expensive. For example, Oko, Thief of Crowns, is disgustingly expensive. And Questing Beast has also gone up, I think, like $10 today?
A ton. Yeah, it went up a ton. It's over 30 at this point.
Yeah, it's 36 is the low now.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that, I don't know, was that partly on Pioneer or was that for Standard? Maybe it was just both. That card's great. I mean, it's a great, great card. And it was already expensive. Heading into the weekend, I think it was in the like low to mid 20s, roughly, trending up. And so today it jumped another, like you said, roughly $10.
Yeah, the spike is caused by Standard because it's not only played in the Gruul deck, but it's also played in the Simic decks. And the Simic decks are what everyone's saying is going to be like the deck to beat in this post-ban world.
Got it. Yeah, that makes perfect sense then. Yeah, you know, Eldraine in general, I was talking to a few folks about Eldraine and how, like, some of the rares and the foils, the non-foils and foils, you know, the price discrepancy and how the increased foil drop rate, plus you've got the extended art on top of it, is kind of suppressing some of the prices. But then you look at cards like Oko and Questing Beast and Ember Flame, and then you've also got, or Ember Cleave, sorry. And then you've also got the lands, you got like Fabled Passage and some of those other lands. The expected value on Eldraine right now has got to be pretty high, I imagine. If you have a chance at cheap sealed boxes, you know, you've got Magic Fests and Command Fests coming up. So if you're a judge out there getting the boxes, or you're, you know, getting kind of grinding those prize ticket walls and able to get a box, I got to think that right now cracking those is actually probably not a bad idea.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's pretty likely.
I can't imagine some of these prices with Oko trending towards Jace Vryn's Prodigy when that card was in Standard and Magic Origin. I mean, that card was, I think, 80. Did it cap at like $80 at one point, non-foil, I want to say? It feels like Oko right now is trending that direction. And, you know, so with that, plus then you've got these other mythics at that price point, you're looking at, if you hit on any one of those, you've got maybe like a third of your box paid for. If you hit on Oko, it's about half and trending up. So
yeah, you're right. It hit like $100 in Standard almost. It was like 90 something.
Yeah, absolutely ridiculous.
But yeah, I mean, I talked about this, I think it was in my last article, not in the one that I'm writing right now. I'm double checking to make sure I don't speak incorrectly. Yeah. I touched on this in my last article on Quiet Spec about how this set is just literally full of cards that are extremely playable in Modern and Legacy, in addition to Standard. And so many of themselves, or so many of those cards are proving themselves like over and over and over again. The Royal Scions, for example. I went to SCG Regionals this weekend, and all the Grixis Death Shadow players are saying is that this card is insane. It's like they feel like it's the best new card they've gotten since Grixis Death Shadow's inception, and that it is a mandatory 2 of in the deck. They would not consider cutting below 2 in their 75. And that's just, you know, one example of a card that is seeing play in Eternal formats. I've got the full list there, but there's so many. Like Once Upon a Time is a 4 of in so many decks.
Yeah, you kind of ate your words on that one, Sam.
I know. I'm not at all ashamed to admit it. You know, and I said I got my my pass because I said I might be wrong, but I wrong. That card is nuts.
it's all over the place.
Yeah.
So anyhow, I mean, guess it sounds like Simic and aggro, the Gruul aggro decks right now. Those were the ones besides Golos that had really, Simic, I think, was the one that had a huge share going into Mythic Championship. Gruul aggro ended up finding its way into the finals. So yeah, those decks definitely, I know the Simic deck converted very well as from day one to day two as well. I want to say it was, I remember seeing the number, I don't want to misquote this, but I want to say it was in like the 45% range or something like that. So not surprising that those are the decks to beat moving forward and why those are moving. We'll have to think more about what, you know, counteracts those, if there's specific cards that are going to be positioned well that were struggling against Golos, but positioned well now because that deck might hopefully be a little bit more nerfed. I say hopefully because I personally didn't enjoy watching the mirrors on those.
One thing that I hope has not been talked to death yet, because I'd love to hear what both of you guys think about this. I think this is something that a lot of people think might be obvious, but I think is possibly more complex than it seems. How expensive will Oko be a week or so from now? Where is this card's price going to go, seeing as it has doubled in price since the ban announcement?
You know, man, that's a hard one to answer, because if you would ask me that probably like a week ago, I would have said, oh yeah, sell it at 45, or I think that was the number. I'm actually saying this from personal experience. I sold my playset at 45.
Mm-hmm.
So I would have said sell there, and I think now it's at 55. And so the question is, do you think it's going to keep jumping up in price? I have to think that until it's banned, it keeps climbing. And I say banned, I'm talking banned in Standard. If that card ends up not having an answer, the question is, does it survive until return to Theros? And if it does Theros actually give answers to it? Because if neither of those things happen, it's on its way out, right? It has to be, or at least temporarily until they can print an answer.
Yeah, I think that's probably correct. But even in the short term here, I think this card has honestly probably more potential than it's even shown us at this point. Because so the next ban announcement is not coming until after the Star City Games Invitational, which is, you know, another very high profile standard tournament. And right before that is another standard Pro Tour. So we are very, very likely positioned to see Oko all over the place dominating. And Oko is, by the way, insane in Modern. I have been playing with and against that card, and it is so hard to beat.
It also just took down a Vintage. I don't know what the tournament was, like the number of players, but it won a Vintage tournament. I saw that posted earlier in General Finance. I mean, it's all over the place. The card.
I'm calling it Oath Co. You heard it here first, folks.
Good job. Yeah, I think the consensus there, the legs on it are still. If you have copies, probably keep your eye on it, but certainly worth listing. I'm definitely takes some profits to pay them off now if you actually speculate on them. But I think it is totally reasonable to assume that card's going to keep climbing in the near term. There was a question: do you guys feel foil borderless is a permanent hold for now, even if banned? I absolutely think that's a yes. I think the extended art, or sorry, not extended art, the borderless foil of Oko. If you got in on those when we talked about them a few days ago, we identified in the European markets that foil borderless Okos were roughly $100, depending on like the price in euros, the currency exchange, et cetera, and the shipping. You could get them from anywhere from like $90 to $115-$120-ish range. And if you got in even at like $110, right now they're selling at $160 on TCG Player. I was just looking at this today. Because I didn't actually get a copy for myself and I regret it, but they're at 160. And, I mean that alone, factoring in the fees and stuff, if you got in at 110, you're talking about like a $25 profit, which is nothing to scoff at for, you know, figure a couple minutes of work. So, I love the foil borderless. I think the players who are going to be using that card are not necessarily standard players, not to say that standard players won't use it. But to get four copies of that for standard, which is what it's run in literally every deck, it's going to cost a pretty penny. I don't know that standard players are going to want to fork over that much money. But the foil borderless is going to have a ton of appeal to really all of the Eternal formats where it's, you know, basically never going to rotate unless it got banned, obviously. So anyway, I think it's a hold. I think it's got room to climb. My kind of target on that when we were talking about it a few days ago was $200. Teferi Hero of Dominaria was $250 at peak, the Mythic Edition. I could see this one getting into that same realm. It's actually much rarer than the Mythic Edition by kind of the data that we have available to us. It's about like 2.5 to 3 times as rare based on some of the numbers we've seen. We estimate, I think there was 20,000 copies of Mythic Edition and like 6,000 or 7,000 of these expected to come online for the Eldraine Mythic Foil Extended Art or Borderless copies. And I'm talking about individual cards there. So 20,000 of like Teferi Hero Dominaria's Mythic Edition versus 6,000 or 7,000 roughly of the Eldraine Oko Borderless Foil. Keep up with me on that. So anyway, I think 200 minimum, I think, is where you should be aiming if you have those cards. I think that's going to be a new price point in probably no time at all with the Pioneer hype, among other things.
That's really interesting. I hadn't really known about the supply on that. I'm always one to be skeptical of these things. You know, when I see a new special borderless foil, I think, oh, that's $200 and it's a standard card. Please sell it. Take my money. I felt the same way about like the Japanese planeswalkers, like the Liliana. And I haven't really checked on those lately, but I assume that they're still fairly high. you know, my personal motto is that you don't really lose as long as you sell. So I like to be selling ahead of these things. But I agree, if there's only about 6,000 of these that are going to be kicking around, it seems like a pretty easy hold. It seems like if Oko has a stranglehold on modern, standard, legacy, and vintage. Even without standard play, that card could still be, you know, 250 very easily.
Just to give you a quick update on the Japanese alt art Liliana foil, Sam.
Yeah.
It is. There are currently 4 copies listed on TCG Player at $1,225.
Okay. And I mean, TCG Player is not like a super accurate metric for that, sure, because, you know, since you lose like 15% to TCG, no one wants to sell a card that expensive there. So it would be more accurate to look at like Facebook groups to see what these are actually moving for. But it's not a totally useless metric. It is interesting to look at that and see what they currently have them listed at. So
last sold was $1,000 on TCG Player. So
there you go.
Price
is still quite high on those.
Yeah.
Price is probably going to be relatively similar with these foil borderless cards.
And to kind of jump onto that too with the Liliana, that one does still have the premium collectors, like,
yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be one of those cards that just has something else attached to it, not necessarily for its playability, although it is good. It does have that Final Fantasy artist backing it, mm-hmm, and that is really a unique thing that we haven't seen on very many cards, other than those Planeswalkers, right? So there's kind of an X factor on that card in particular. But
Go ahead. Well, I was just going to say, personally, I will never renounce my skepticism. I think my girlfriend, actually, Jocelyn Lombaria, learned a powerful lesson here. And this is a lesson I learned a long time ago, but I think the way that she learned it is a lot easier to understand. And it's that she bought a couple of those Elishnorn and Judge foils thinking that, and everyone knows this story, of course, already, but, you know, thinking that these are a really premium product, nothing like this is ever going to happen again, totally exclusive, and then Wizards just printed them, not necessarily into the dirt, but they released a very, very large print run of the Judge Foil Elishnorns that are the cool Phyrexian text on them. And it's just, that's kind of the way that I view a lot of these cards that get printed at that reach that massive, like, $1,000 price point. Like for Liliana, the Japanese, what Liliana, they were saying that they were going to be in those standard promo packs. And so I thought that it's possible this means there might be a bunch of these. So that's, you know, potentially worrisome depending on the actual specifics of how common these are. And it kind of wound up being that they still weren't common, you know. Not a lot of new Liliana's really entered the market from that. But it's something I'm always worried about. And when we're talking about numbers as high as thousands of dollars of risk, where like the Elishnorn went down by like, you know, literally $700 in price, it's not a risk that I'm willing to take. But I understand why others are willing to take it, especially because, you know, Liliana was just... The people who took the risk and held their Lilianas are not going to be punished for it in any way. And I think it's likely that the same will happen with these Okos. I think it's very likely that if you hold on to your Okos, you're not going to be punished. Hell, you might possibly be very rewarded for it. Oko could go up to, you know, as I said earlier, 250 very easily, regardless of standard demand. But, you know, you just have to be careful with these things. If it's really important to you to make that money, just go make the money.
Yeah, without diving into this too much more, and I want to, in the interest of wrapping up here on almost exactly on time, I just want to put one final thought on this. Oko, my whole stance on Oko's borderless foil a few days ago was at 130 when we started talking about it, and my stance really was just that at $130 compared to some of these other premium products, and knowing, you know, things we knew about its demand, the card itself, how good it is, and then the lower supply on these like kind of premium mythics, my take on it was 130 was too cheap. I didn't have necessarily the presumption that 200, 300, I don't really know what the upside to it is necessarily, but 130 felt like in a few weeks or months more realistically, it wouldn't be $130 anymore. It ended up taking like 2 or 3 days for everyone. Like, it didn't take long at all for everyone to look at that and be like, wow, I want one of these cards. And I say everyone, I'm not talking about in here in the insiders, I'm talking about the community. I want one of these cards. And now all of a sudden they're 160 and they're trending up from there. So long story short, I personally think it's a hold. I think my target is 200 for it. If I had copies of it, that would be where I'd be aiming to sell them. If I, you know, and if I couldn't sell them, I would love to have one for my collection just to have. So that's kind of my take on that to wrap it up.
I agree. I think 200 is a very reasonable sell point for Oko. I think it's a reasonable expectation overall. And looking at TCG Player right now, there's like literally seven listed. So I think it's pretty reasonable to expect $200 is a reasonable price for Oko, Thief of Crowns, Borderless Foil.
Yeah, so wrapping up the cast, we're actually right on schedule for an hour here. Just wrapping things up there. I don't see any other questions that we didn't get to, which is awesome. I apologize, everyone, for some of the issues at the beginning I had. But to wrap things up, I think we did a nice job here covering the Pioneer craziness today. We also got to the ban list for Standard and, you know, what we kind of think about the meta moving forward, a.k.a. Oko. I will recap in QS Cast a couple of our picks for Pioneer that we felt, you know, basically just reemphasizing some of the stuff that's already been discussed about today, but really talking about the lands, some of the specific lands that we called out earlier. That's going to be Mana Confluence, and then really the Kaladesh Fastland, specifically the Blooming Marsh, Spirebuff Canal, and I think we also mentioned Botanical Sanctum, although that one I think has already seen a little bit of movement directly correlated to the assumptions of Oko. So we'll recap that in QS Cast for anyone who's listening in late. But other than that, thanks everybody for joining us.
Real quick, do we want to just have each of us say one card that we recommend as what is still a good buy from that hasn't necessarily spiked super hardcore yet from Pioneer?
Absolutely. If you've got one, let's hear it.
Yeah, I mean, I already said it earlier. I just really, 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 really want to say it again. Yeah, I love Torrential Gear Hulk. I profess my love for Torrential Gear Hulk. That card is insanely powerful. It's literally $3. It's a mythic rare. It didn't get an event deck reprint or anything. So the supply is, you know, obviously very high, but not crazy like some other cards. Cough, cough, Heart of Kieran. So Torrential Gear Hulk is an awesome buy, especially if three mana Teferi gets banned from this format. Torrential Gear Hulk is probably the best card in the format. But even with three mana Teferi in the format, Torrential Gear Hulk is still definitely a good card. It's going to be the control staple. So, and it's going to be probably a four of in that deck, maybe like a three of. So very, very highly recommend that card.
I guess I'll go next here. I know I was pretty high on Thoughtseize and Shocklands earlier in the cast. So I'm going to go with a little bit of an offbeat one here, and that's going to be Whisperwood Elemental from Fate Reforged. I remember this card closing the door on a lot of mid-range matchups, and I wouldn't sleep on this one. It is very powerful, and I think it's got all the makings of a card that can just take over the metagame in those certain green decks, some of them including Oko.
That's a great pick, and also like supply is not crazy on that one. Again, you know, no reprints or anything at any point, and the price point is low enough that buying in is still a really good choice.
You can find these for $1 right now.
Chris will go ahead and wrap it up by picking Chandra Torture Defiance. We've talked a lot about burn, red, et cetera, et cetera. Chandra Torture Defiance is a phenomenal piece in what I would imagine a burn deck would want. It also benefits from a tougher mana base because getting to that four in mono red is going to be a lot easier in certain cases than you're going to be talking about like those two and three color decks. So you can get those at $10 non-foil, I think about 30 in foil if I remember correctly. The foils are interesting because they're in fairly low supply. I had actually been looking at this card for Modern recently, just out of curiosity, Modern and really even Commander. But yeah, the foils are 30. There's only four pages of those on TCG. I could see $10. This has some serious price memory. So if it ever caught on in Pioneer, $20 plus upside is certainly possible without a reprint.
Well, cool. All right. Yeah. Thank you for hosting, Chris. This is a great cast.
Yeah. We'll get those three picks and a couple of other notes recapped. I do see, you know what, I actually have one question that just came in here about the My Little Pony special item that actually goes on sale tomorrow. Just a reminder for everyone, it does go on sale. We'll put that in the recap as well. They are on sale for $50. You can get four of those per household, I believe it was. 30 of your $50 goes to a charity. I forget which charity. I know it was a really great one too, and I wish I knew it to boast for Wizards. It was for a great cause for Wizards and Hasbro. Those are certainly an interesting item, you know, for secondary markets. It's going to be a wonderful collector's item. There's definitely a lot of people who, it sounds like, play Magic, but also have either daughters or sons or just folks in general who are interested in that My Little Pony's brand. So I think those are a very interesting pickup. I personally may grab a couple just to have them, just to be able to put those in my inventory and say that I have them. So
yeah, the charity name is Extra Life.
Extra Life. Perfect. Yeah, thank you.
For those of you wondering.
Extra Life. There you go. Perfect. All right.
Yeah,
everybody,
awesome charity. Really good cause. So definitely look into that card. Yeah. Thanks again for coming and listening, everyone.
Yeah. Wonderful cast. Thank you, Kribari and Sam, for joining us. And thanks, everybody, for tuning in. Have a great night.
Sure. Yeah, this is Sam Lowe signing off. Have a good one, guys. Talk to you next time.
Bye.